I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Back in December 2018, New Jersey high school wrestler Andrew Johnson, who was black, was given a choice by a referee at a competition: cut or cover your hair or forfeit the match. A video of Johnson's hair being cut quickly went viral, and almost as quickly were charges of racial discrimination. The American Bar Association reported that African American women face the most workplace discrimination because of their hair, even to the point of being sent home. The organization referenced a study that 80% of African American women have felt they couldn't wear their hair in braids or cornrows, locks, knots, or afros if they wanted to fit in at work. Last month, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Crown Act that prohibits discrimination based on an individual's texture or style of their hair. It's now waiting for passage in the U.S. Senate. A bit later in the show, I'll talk with Pennsylvania Representative Joanna McClinton about a similar Crown bill that is in Harrisburg. But first, why hair is a civil rights issue. Let me introduce our two guests. Wendy Green is a professor of law at Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law, founder of the Free the Hair movement. She's also a legal architect of federal and state level Crown Acts, and she is working on her first book, Free the Hair. And Wendy Green, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me this morning.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Lori Tharp. She's associate professor of journalism at Temple University, co-author of Hair Story, Untangling the Roots of Black Hair in America. In fact, she was a guest on Radio Times when that book was first published. She's also the host of a podcast, My American Melting Pot. And Lori Tharp, it's nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's so great to be here. Hello.
Nice. Hello, 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 hello. Let me make sure our listeners can join our conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. Again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Wendy Green, let me begin with you, and let me begin with this House bill that did pass last month in September. What does it say in terms of addressing the problem of hair discrimination?
Sure. So the federal bill really illuminates how natural hair discrimination, in particular as it relates to discrimination on the basis of afros, locks, braids, and twists that African descendants commonly wear, has been a systemic and longstanding form of racial subordination and segregation and discrimination in the United States, harkening all the way back to eras of racial slavery and apartheid in this country. And so what it does, it clarifies that race, as we think about race for the enforcement of our civil rights statutes, race discrimination animates from discrimination on the basis of characteristics that are commonly associated with particular racial groups, like our hairstyles and hair texture. So it really clarifies that as we are trying to enforce our federal civil rights statutes.
Applying to the workplace, applying to schools.
Yes.
Anything else? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Yes. So if passed, it would apply to Title VII, which prohibits racial discrimination in our workplaces, as well as in educational spaces, institutions that are federally funded, public accommodations, as well as in housing.
Looking at the bill, and it did pass the House of Representatives, was there Republican buy-in on this at all?
There was, but there was some opposition as well, which was to be expected. You know, a lot of individuals either are not aware of the systematic nature of this discrimination and its harms and the consequences on African descendants, or they just simply think that it's a superficial bill and are under a misunderstanding that our federal civil rights laws already protects against this form of discrimination.
Well, Lori Tharp, let me go to you, and this is a big topic, but help us understand the kind of negative stereotypes that have been associated with natural black hair. And I realize that was almost entirely what your book was about, but help us understand that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the negative kind of ideas that surround black hair, you know, you have to kind of go all the way back to what the experience, the black experience in America. And I always say that, you know, if you want to understand the black experience in America, you know, look at our hair, look at the journey of our hair, which is why we wrote Hair Story, because it encapsulates that so well. Essentially, when Africans were brought to this country, you know, the way that their white slave owners, if you will, you know, maintained this, their oppression wasn't just the physical oppression, but it was also mental. It was also trying to instill this idea that black people were a subspecies from white people, right? And the way they did that was highlight the things that made them different, i.e. their hair, their skin color, certain features, saying these features made black people more like animals and less like humans, right? And that was, so again, to keep the races separate. It was to keep black people feeling inferior. It was to maintain a system of a white supremacist, if you will, hierarchy and system of power over black people. So the black hair was thought of or categorized more like animal fur. It was deemed ugly, uncivilized. It was really everything that you could say negatively about black people was, you know, it was illustrated in the hair. And so from, you know, from the beginning of the experience of black people in this country with white Europeans, the hair was kind of the most physical manifestation, obviously the skin color also, but the hair was able, you could point to it and say, look at how animalistic they are. Look at their hair, okay? So from the very beginning, you had negative connotations that were eventually believed by black people as well as white people as this is what makes them different. And as time passed, the connotations around black hair went from, you know, just straight negative, but then also to representative of something countercultural or violent or associated with negative behaviors. For example, the Afro in the civil, during the civil rights movement was a visual sign of a rebellion, if you will. It was interpreted as a sign of rebellion when in fact it really was a sign of black people saying we are no longer going to conform and assimilate to make white people happy, since it's not doing us any good in terms of achieving our civil rights. But it was looked at by a white audience as these are angry black people, and that Afro hairstyle signifies something dangerous. Dreadlocks, for example, people look at it as something associated with drug culture. So a lot of the hairstyles are misinterpreted as dangerous, rebellious, or associated with criminal behavior, but even underlying that, you have a very, like, a historically negative understanding of black hair.
Well, Wendy Green, let me go back to you. And I was reading in preparation for the show that until recently, really in the armed forces, there were all sorts of grooming policies that African-American women in the military had, quote unquote, unkempt hair. Now, my understanding, those policies were rescinded. But just, you know, the history is important to understand. But also the current day is also important to understand.
Yes, no, absolutely. And again, it speaks to what Professor Tharps is talking about and the ways in which our natural hairstyles have been stigmatized as unkempt. In that policy, they also called them matted. And in particular, they were referring to the natural hairstyles that African descendant service women often wear, really to be able to provide more effective service in our military as they're securing our borders. And so, unfortunately, under federal law, the ways in which it has been interpreted by federal courts, unlike the military, you know, African-American women basically are very vulnerable to these kinds of grooming policies and regulation they're under, except for in the cases of Afros. Under federal law right now, there is federal rights, civil rights protection against racial discrimination on the basis of Afros. But interestingly, courts have created what I call a hair splitting legal distinction. So if you braid or lock or twist that afro, then magically is no longer about race, and it gives employers the essentially an unfettered prerogative to regulate our natural hairstyles, discriminate on those grounds, deny us employment opportunities for which we're qualified, and subject us to a hyper-regulation of our bodies and workplaces.
Well, and just to pick up on that, I mean, the bill passed the House, so it's in the Senate. If the Senate passes the bill, would that do away with that kind of discrimination about hair?
Well, at least it will. I can't say, just like the Civil Rights Act today, we're still suffering race discrimination in our workplaces. So it won't be, you know, extinguished, but it definitely can be diminished. And we also look at legislation as serving a very critical education function as well.
Lori Tharp, sounds like you wanted to add something. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, two things now, but really quickly, that I think that the passing of the Crown Act acts as a deterrent. It's not going to make it stop, but it absolutely will act as a deterrent because it gives Black people an opportunity to fight back. It gives them something to, if the discrimination does happen, they have a way to fight back. And also, employers do think about discriminating, they'll think twice because that law exists. But I don't think it'll absolutely stop them. But what I was going to say before really quickly was simply that what Professor Green just mentioned is that part of the problem with discrimination against Black hair in this country is that most people who are making these laws and policies and grooming standards, they don't understand Black hair. That's what's really frustrating about so many of these things is that so many of these laws and standards, you know, like she said, you can have an afro, but if you twist the afro, it's no longer acceptable. Like, that doesn't even make sense. And a lot of the military, when they created their policy that was then eventually changed, it was changed because the policy was created without understanding how Black hair works. There was just such a basic lack of understanding. And that's really, I don't want to say that's the basis of all the problems, but that is fundamentally exacerbating the problem, is that we live in such a segregated world. So many white people don't understand even how Black hair works, much less what it symbolizes, what it means, and, you know, the cultural implications. So the lack of education and understanding of just the basic, like, chemistry, chemicals, and physics of Black hair would go a long way.
Well, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to do the show. And to you, Professor Green, and we have about a minute before our first break here, but I feel so dumb asking this question, but since you both raised it, I mean, how does Black hair work?
Well, for starters, most of us, and it's not a dumb question, because no. I remember when I'm wearing my hair curly and big, one of my coworkers says, "How did you get your hair like that?" And I'm saying, "I woke up like this." So I didn't have to do anything special. On the alternative side is that for me to straighten it, I absolutely have to do a lot of things to achieve that hair, that straightened hairstyle, like, you know, putting on toxic chemicals, chemical relaxants on my hair, or extreme heat styling, or in some cases for some women, you know, really harmful wigs and weaves in order to achieve that hairstyle. And so there is, as Professor Tharp says, there's a lot of misunderstanding and miseducation and just lack of exposure to the ways in which our hair just naturally grows out of our scalps. And this bill is really important in terms of addressing that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have to take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking about Black hair as a civil rights issue. That's Professor Wendy Green from Drexel University's Law School. Also with us, Professor Lori Harps, an associate professor of journalism at Temple University. And again, we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We're talking about afros, braids, twists, and locks. Last month, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill that bans discrimination based on hairstyle and texture in the workplace and in schools. The Crown Act, which stands for Create a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair, is now in the Senate. Looks like some 7 states, including New Jersey, have passed similar laws, and we'll be talking in about 10 minutes or so about a bill that could pass the Pennsylvania legislature. In the meantime, we're talking with Drexel University Law Professor Wendy Green, who's been involved in writing the Crown Act, and Temple University Professor, Associate Professor Lori Tharps, co-author of Hair Story, Untangling the Roots of Black Hair in America. Lori, let me turn to you, and in preparation for the show, and even in my introduction, I talked about the Black wrestler Andrew Johnson, who had his hair shaved. This was, gosh, almost 2 years ago, shaved because a referee said he couldn't wrestle if he had dreads, which he had. And I was thinking about what it means to be forced to have your hair cut. And we know in World War II, collaborators with the Nazis had their hair cut or shaved. Even people taken to gas chambers in places like Auschwitz had their hair shaved to turn them into nobodies, to be perfectly honest with you. And I just want to give you a chance to speak to that experience of having your hair, if not shaved, criticized, told to go home, change the style, what that means psychologically.
Marty, I'm sitting here nodding my head because, you know, you said it makes you a nobody, and that's exactly what it means, and particularly for Black people. And I have to say that the verb I used when witnessing that young man's hair being cut off was that it was hacked off. It was hacked off in such a way that it brought tears to my eyes. And it harkened back to the history of when Africans were loaded up onto slave ships. The first thing that the slave owners or slave ship, I don't know, captains, whatever they're called, would do would be to hack their hair off. And they hacked it off for a very deliberate reason, and that was to render them as nobodies, because Black people traditionally have used hairstyles as identity markers. In Africa, hairstyles could tell somebody what tribe somebody belonged to, what status they had in their communities. The hairstyles were very elaborate, very revered. And again, it was a way to connect with people and to show your identity. And that's still used. I mean, that's still very true today. People's hairstyles are not sometimes, I mean, they can be just fun styles, but a lot [S2] Sure. [S1] Of times they are significant and they harken towards a person's identity. Dreadlocks can be they're a style that requires patience and care and dedication and time. And so for somebody to hack them off so callously and so publicly, our hair is part of our identity. So that particular scene was devastating. It's like being, your clothes ripped off even, you know, it's being rendered naked in front of, you know, the public. And that was it for a child, particularly that was a child, you know, that's very painful to witness. And I think that speaks to this idea of, again, like you said, when we are being policed for our hair, it's not like saying, you know, you can't wear that blue sweatshirt. It's anonymous. It doesn't mean anything. We're talking about something that is intrinsically us. And because our hair has always been highlighted as the part of our identity that we have to hide, straighten, assimilate, fix, you know, we use the verb fix your hair as if it was broken. I don't think white people are told to fix their hair. They're told to comb your hair, brush your hair, style your hair, but not fix your hair. We are constantly battling this idea that our hair is wrong in this country.
Sure. And let me pick up on something that I said in my introduction from the American Bar Association, Professor Green, having to do with a study that 80% of African-American women have felt they couldn't wear their hair in braids, cornrows, locks, knots, and afros if they wanted to fit in at work, which raises the question about a kind of self-censorship that could be an additional problem when talking about hair discrimination.
Yes. You know, Black women from very early on, you know, even in through our childhoods, we're very much censoring ourselves, especially through the medium of our hair. And so because, you know, there are messages that are communicated to you at very early ages that in order to have greater access, whether it be educational opportunities, personal opportunities, as well as employment opportunities, you need to conform to this Eurocentric norm of beauty, i.e. straighten your hair. And so even if someone is not, you know, expressly telling you to do so, that is often communicated. And we see it even in other studies where, you know, overwhelmingly job interviewers will describe African-American women's natural hairstyles as unprofessional. They rate them at higher rates as unprofessional than, say, white women with straightened hair, white women with curly hair, as well as Black women with straightened hair. And also there's new research out of Duke, out of the Fuqua Business School, again, just reaffirming that interviewers are more likely to disqualify Black women who are wearing natural hairstyles like locks, braids, twists, and afros, even though they're qualified for the job.
Well, and is this? Go ahead, Lori.
Just to say that this is, it's really important to note that this is not just a women's issue, that Black men suffer the same level of discrimination if they choose to wear their hair grown out, you know, above like a very short, like 1 inch. I don't even want to call it an afro because we're not even talking about afros, but we're letting, if men grow their hair kind of above the line of their head, they too suffer from similar discrimination. They are too seen as unprofessional or a threat, much less if they decide to wear cornrows, braids, locks. It's, you know, it's only acceptable if they're maybe professional athletes. But other than that, Black men are also let go from jobs, not hired, even when they're doing jobs like being a delivery person or, you know, working for a mail, you know, like an Amazon or a UPS or anything like that. There are this idea that there are certain styles that men, you know, I would say natural styles that men can't wear without feeling that they will be sent home. And this is, again, even male students in schools, which we've seen over and over again. So it's not just a female issue, which I think needs to be highlighted, that we're not talking about something that only is like a beauty issue or it's a female issue. This is an issue that anybody who is Black and has Black hair growing out of their head has to deal with.
And let me just quickly reintroduce you and also get a third guest to join our conversation. That's Professor Lori Tharps, Associate Professor of Journalism at Temple University, co-author of Hair Story, Untangling the Roots of Black Hair in America. Just quickly, Lori, when was that book written?
Hair Story was written for the first time in 2001, but we updated it in 2014 because of the natural hair movement. We had to, you know, go back to the press, you know, and say we need to talk about the natural hair movement and the impact and influence of the internet on the Black hair community. So it was most recently came out again in 2014.
And also with us is Professor Wendy Green. She's a professor of law at Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law, founder of Free the Hair Movement, also a legal architect of federal and state level Crown Acts. And joining us now is Representative Joanna McClinton. She's a Democratic state representative for the 191st district in Pennsylvania, which includes Delaware and Philadelphia counties. And Representative McClinton, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. So glad to be here in this important conversation. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You are a co-sponsor of this legislation that is in Harrisburg. Help us understand the language and what you hope it does.
Absolutely. So I am the co-sponsor of House Bill 2725. And this bill will provide, will eliminate discrimination for anybody based off their hairstyle or their hair texture. As it's already been said in conversation, as I've been listening, you know, there's subtle discrimination that happens when people are singled out for having certain hairstyles that might be what the normal is for society. And our anti-discrimination laws right now in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania do not keep pace with the changing workplace, educational, and social environment. And it leaves so many people, especially Black women, at risk of being targeted for discrimination. So we have this legislation in place so that there is now no excuse for being able to dismiss someone from a sporting event or not permit them to participate or to even walk into their school building or get a job or receive a promotion based off of the way they present themselves to the world through their hairstyle.
And have there been acts of that kind of discrimination in Pennsylvania?
In Pennsylvania, not as much with prominence. We've seen a lot of things happening in other parts of the country where the law has already happened. Most of us are familiar with the gentleman in the competing for wrestling and unable to participate because of his locks and cutting them in front of the whole world right before the competition. It was just heart-wrenching. That type of incident has not yet occurred in the Commonwealth, and we're trying to get ahead of it so that it does not happen here.
And my understanding is that your legislation would amend the Human Rights Act. Do I have that correct?
That is correct. The language would go in the Human Rights Act so that the commission, the Human Relations Commission and the Commonwealth, would be able to explore these types of things. And even somebody, if it happens to them, they'll have standing to be able to go into a court of law and say, hey, this is not supposed to happen because I'm a protected class. My hairstyle is a protected category.
And what has been the response from lawmakers in Harrisburg?
So many of my colleagues did not even realize that this was an issue. They're, of course, in Harrisburg, out of 253 state legislators, there are only 9 black women. So to talk about natural hairstyles, it's not a common conversation on the floor of the House or in the Senate. And as a result, they are really being informed with the release of the co-sponsorship memo and all of the great press that WHYY has been covering and so many other outlets. They are getting informed for the first time that this is a problem.
This is a more personal question, but have you had to either change your style or think of how you wanted to style your hair based on jobs that you've had?
Absolutely. when I was a law student, before I even came out of a school, I was very conscientious of the fact there were so few women of color. How was I going to distinguish myself and help people to remember who I was and know who I am versus the other black woman in my class? That would always happen in the classroom, and my goal was for that to never happen in a courtroom. So I'd always wear the same type of hairstyle. And once I became a young public defender, because so many times my clients said, how old are you? You don't look like you should be representing me. You know, I never wore braids. I never wore any natural style because I always wanted to look professional and like I was the one who could handle their cases. So I've made conscientious choices throughout my career on how I present myself based on pressure to perform and pressure to fit in and pressure to comply to society. If you had ever told me before 4 years when I slipped into wearing heat-free styles where now I'm basically doing an afro just about every day, I would have said no. I've always worn my pressed hair the same type of way for my whole life.
Well, let me get Professor Wendy Green and Professor Lori Tharpson on the conversation as well. And I have the same kind of personal question to you, Wendy Green, about what it was like growing up as a young girl and how you did your hair and what kind of pressure you felt to either fit in or to go natural or what.
Sure. So, you know, thankfully, I was in an environment where my parents really did allow me to express myself pretty freely. So I did wear, you know, straightened hairstyles, you know, press and comb hairstyles to braided hair with the beads and Afro puffs. But even with that, I remember when I was a cheerleader that every week without fail, my hairstylist would pick me up from a cheerleading practice so that I could get my hair straightened so that I could cheer the next day and do so in a way that I thought would be acceptable and wouldn't probably render some type of stigmatization about my natural hair texture. And that was not anything that was communicated by my parents, but it was, you know, definitely communicated by broader society. So I felt the same kinds of pressures to have to conform to straighten hair expectations and mandates, even when it wasn't as explicit or expressed.
How about for you, Lori Tharps?
Pretty much, I grew up in very white environments. I grew up in Wisconsin, and it was very clear to me that assimilation was the only way to go in everything that I did. And so I kept my hair straight. I think I had my hair chemically relaxed when I was like maybe 10 or 11. And, you know, kept it that way without thinking. And not only did I keep it straight, but I was very clear about, you know, making sure that my hairstyles mimicked the styles of the white girls around me, meaning, you know, ponytails, you know, a bang, whatever was the style for the white girls around me, that's what I did. I never wanted to have a style that could look too black because I didn't want to, you know, call attention to myself. And it wasn't until I moved to New York City, lived in Brooklyn, was surrounded by beautiful black women with different styles that I really started to just contemplate what the relationship was with my hair. And I wasn't until I was almost 30 when I stopped relaxing my hair. And it was such a revelation. It was shocking to me that I didn't even know what my natural hair felt, looked like, behaved like. It was like getting to know it was like finding you a long lost sister or brother and being like, oh my goodness, like, let's get to know each other, even though we're blood related. So it felt it felt really liberating, but also sad in a way that it had taken me until I was 30 to actually get to know a part of my own body.
That's such a poignant story. Representative McClinton, what's the, I guess, trajectory for this legislation? Where does it go? Do you expect it to pass the House, pass the Senate? What do you think?
Absolutely. So the key is for us, this is an ongoing conversation. We're actually winding down our current legislative session this fall. In the House, we only have 3 days, and the Senate has something like 5 or 6 days remaining. So there's not enough time now for us to get it done before we reorganize and even get through the November election. However, we rolled it out this fall to start the conversation so that we can inform people and get a buzz out there, and so that we can get it sent to Governor Wolf's desk when we get into 2021. That is our objective, not just a talking point, for us to actually change the law so that this is protected here in the Commonwealth.
And to you, Professor Green, I mean, you have been, and we're almost up on one of these other breaks, you have worked with a number of state-level legislators, I guess, and also the feds looking at this Crown Act. Anything that Pennsylvania should know?
Well, I think that there is a really solid record so far on the state level as well as the federal level that Pennsylvania can draw upon. Out in California, which was the first state to introduce and pass the or to make it effect or to sign it into law, rather, the Crown Act, that it was really, really successful and extremely, just very powerful in terms of really allowing for all of these voices and stories in all of these experiences that we're even talking about today to be really showcased and to really have a piece of legislation that reflects, these experiences of African descendants throughout this country.
Well, Representative Joanna McClinton, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Staying with us, Professor Lori Tharps and Professor Wendy Green. We're talking about hair, civil rights, discrimination, much more after this very short break, including a lot of comments from our listeners as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Let me play a clip from the Oscars earlier this year. Hair Love got a best Oscar, got an Oscar for Best Animated Short. This is director and writer Matthew Cherry talking about the importance of normalizing black hair and the Crown Act during his acceptance speech on the stage, and this was at the 92nd Academy Awards.
So We have a big team that we have to thank, but time is running short. So I just want to say that Hair Love was done because we wanted to see more representation in animation. We wanted to normalize black hair. There's a very important issue that's out there. It's the Crown Act. And if we can help to get this passed in all 50 states, it will help stories like DeAndre Arnold, who's our special guest tonight, stop to happen.
And I should add that DeAndre Arnold, 18-year-old, he was at a Texas high school, and they wanted to cut his dreads, and he refused, just to put that into some kind of context. Let me read a couple of emails, one that came in pretty quickly. Interested in hear the guest perspective on white people wearing locks. Is this cultural appropriation? And if I could put that to you, Professor Wendy Green, how do you see that?
Well, I can't say that in all cases it is cultural appropriation, but there is definitely a phenomenon whereby when European Americans or white Americans or just white people in general have worn natural hairstyles akin to, black people, that oftentimes they're celebrated and seen as, sort of a cultural icon, if you will, when they're wearing those hairstyles. But when black people have worn those hairstyles, that they are denigrated and stigmatized. Even in an early federal district court case, Rogers versus American Airlines, the federal district court judge intimated that the black woman who was claiming that, her cornrow braided hairstyle was a reflection of her Afrocentrism and her African heritage, longstanding heritage, that the federal district court implied that the reason why she started wearing cornrow braids was because Bo Derek wore cornrow braids in the movie 10.
Well, yes, exactly.
Right, which is laughable to even think about. But unfortunately, that kind of misperception and just that lack of education, again, you know, referring back to what Professor Tharps was talking about in terms of our hair, and how we have long been wearing our hair in these styles for a variety of reasons, really ended up shaping that opinion to where he said that, you know, her wearing cornrow, you know, the bar against her cornrow braids had nothing to do with racial discrimination, nor did it have anything to do with her experience as a Black woman in this country.
Professor Laurie Harps, let me read an email from George. And this is about the young wrestler that I referenced, Andrew Johnson. The young wrestler was not asked to cut his hair because it was black. He was asked to cut it because it was long. That's the same rule that applies to white wrestlers. This proposed law sounds like it's setting up a special set of rules for black people. Can you respond to that?
I sure can. So I think that, you know, what... you know, your previous question, you know, asked about cultural appropriation, and Professor Green made a good point that when white people wear black hairstyles, they're lauded as trendsetters or innovative with their hairstyles. And that kind of speaks to answering this, the person who just wrote in their question. It's when white hairstyles are on white people, when black hairstyles are worn by white people, they're not discriminated against. This young man who was wearing his dreadlocks, the wrestler, yes, it said, okay, so it's that they were too long, but the mm-hmm. wrestler had those locks the week before. You know, it's like this, the if you read it, what happened and how it was, it's almost like the law was created at that exact moment, right? The consistency with which that law was, the law or the regulations were made, that it seemed very, very arbitrary that they had to cut his locks off that time. Because as I mentioned before, you don't grow dreadlocks overnight. This young man had been wrestling, and why suddenly he had to cut him off that moment, it made no sense whatsoever. The idea that this is a law that's just for, somehow... you know, I don't know what the argument would be, but black people are, their hairstyles, when they're on their heads, right, are discriminated against more than they are with white people. As the example, again, whether it was Bo Derek in the 70s or one of the Kardashians in 2020, they are not being sent home. They are not being targeted. They are not being told they are not playing by the rules or fitting into corporate culture when they wear these styles. And yet black people, men and women, are over and over again, because the reality is it's not even so much the hair, it's the hair attached to a black body. Black bodies are discriminated against. And it's whether it's our hair, our skin color, something, it's about racism, plain and simple. And having these laws, the Crown Act, we need it because we have laws already that make it illegal to discriminate against somebody based on their race. And yet it's the hair that people use now. So now we have to make a law to say you can't discriminate against us because of our hair, because that is the other way that people will use like bias and race-based discrimination to get rid of black people.
Let me put a question to you, Professor Green. This is an email from Marcy. Says, how should we best work for change in our work environment around this issue? I work for a local hospital and discovered in our hospital dress code wording to the effect, quote, employees will not have hair with shells or beads or that is otherwise distracting, unquote. Mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed to say I haven't complained about the issue, though. I recognize it as discrimination against my black coworkers. And she's kind of saying, so what do I do as an employee here?
Right. No, and that's an excellent, and that's a very common type of policy under which Black employees are often, regulated. And so in that last term, especially when they said distracting hairstyles, that's the kind of language that is often used to again, regulate our natural hairstyles. So she's spot on, and good for her for actually being aware of that. And I think now is to raise that level of awareness to her supervisors or those who have implemented that policy and those who are responsible for enforcing that policy. They may have just copied and pasted, right? Not even thinking about the kinds of implications, but to the extent that they did think about it and were very conscious and aware, it's time to try to really redress maybe those conscious or unconscious biases and stereotypes associated with Black hair and the ways in which they're enforcing that so-called neutral policy against Black employees. So I think raising their attention, raising their awareness, and educating them as well about the consequences.
And I wonder, I mean, in part, as I said, this is why we wanted to do the show, to help to educate us, frankly, about this particular issue. And I wonder, to you, Professor Green, when there are these what appear to be discriminatory laws, is it ignorance or is it just kind of this knee-jerk stereotypical discrimination or even racism at work?
It's a both and. I don't think it's an either or. Again, some people are just, they're reflecting their own subjective ideals about what they believe is acceptable or professional in the workplace. Not really, again, thinking about the ways in which it's going to play itself out across the different employees based upon their racial, their ethnic identities. Sometimes it is very much about explicitly targeting Black bodies, Black employees, trying to extinguish, if not, eliminate natural hair styles like locks, braids, and twists, or other types of hairstyles that they believe are associated with Blackness, and really trying to force Black employees to conform to their sort of Eurocentric ideals of what is attractive or acceptable or professional in the workplace. So I think it's a both and. It's not an either or.
I hear you. And I wonder too, Professor Tharps, and this is more just anecdotal on my part or just even observational. I mean, what I observe sort of walking around my life, walking around Philadelphia, is just a lot of variety of hairstyles. And I wonder whether just because we've got young people coming up and maybe have a different view of their place in the world or even their appearance or their hair, are things sort of changing around us or are we still stuck with these kind of knee-jerk stereotypic responses?
I think what Matthew Cherry, the creator of Hair Love, what he said is so important, and it's kind of what you're just saying right now, Marty, is that we need to normalize different hairstyles. And I think that that is what we're seeing. I mean, like I said, Hair Story came out in 2001, and people continuously ask my co-author, Ayanna Bird, and I, like, are things getting better? And right. Even though we still see, in 2020, the need for the Crown Act, or we see in 2018, this young man getting his hair hacked off, or a young man being sent home from school because he's, got dreadlocks, we are seeing more natural hair in public places. We are seeing more natural hair in the workplace. So it must get to a point where, the answer, I don't believe the Crown Act is the answer. Mm-hmm. What has to be the answer, like I said, is normalizing these styles and removing them from the category of stigmatized styles or styles that have some sort of negative meaning. And the way that happens, again, is by seeing more everyday people, more teachers, more doctors, more actors and actresses and celebrities and professional politicians wearing these styles. Because really and truly, the way ignorance continues is by lack of seeing other people or seeing being removed from the truth, I guess. And the truth is that you can wear an afro and not be trying to turn over the United States government. You can wear dreadlocks and be a medical professional, right? So, or you can wear dreadlocks and not be a vegetarian. But the other thing I really wanted to make a point also is that it is important to note that it is not just white people who maintain these negative ideas and stereotypes about black hair. Sometimes we find that some of these policies are actually written by black people themselves. And the understanding that this kind of overarching white supremacist idea about black people being inferior, that black hairstyles signify these negative things, we are all living under the smog of white supremacy, so we all are susceptible to these beliefs and ideals. So this is work that we all have to do. It's not just white people's homework. This is definitely something that we all have to question our thoughts and beliefs about what black hairstyles mean.
Professor Green, let me squeeze in another email. This is from Heather. She says, African hair braiding has tended to be not included in cosmetology education, is treated as something different. Thankfully, Pennsylvania has a braiding license, but it should not be treated as separate, in my view. Throughout the country, braiding shops have even been shut down because they were not licensed by cosmetology departments and not considered legitimate. I remember hearing some stories about that on our airwaves, and I wonder if you could speak to that.
Sure. There definitely is a push for, I know right now in New York and other states, I have been working with some of the hairstylists and cosmetologists who are trying to trying to ensure that education about African descendants' natural hair texture and hairstyles is now a part of their curriculum. Unfortunately, that is still very much that lack of education, that lack of exposure to natural hair textures and hairstyles that African descendants commonly have is very much still a contemporary manifestation of racial segregation and racial apartheid in this country. And so there definitely is a push for it. I absolutely agree that it needs to be, because everybody needs to be culturally competent,
sure.
Especially when we're talking about something that is so personal. Everybody should be free to go to any hair salon, and there should be a competent professional there who is able to do their hair. Because what has happened in a lot of hair salons is that, black women, girls, boys, and men have been denied access to that accommodation because there's no one there who has any understanding as it relates to how to do our hair. And that should end in the 21st century.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Wendy Green, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. She's a professor of law at Drexel University, Thomas R. Klein School of Law, founder of the Free the Hair Movement, a legal architect of federal and state level Crown Acts, currently working on her first book to be called Free the Hair. And Lori Tharps, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. She's an associate professor of journalism at Temple University, co-author of Hair Story, and host of the podcast My American Melting Pot. We do want to close things out with a scene from the television show Black-ish. Diana, played by Marcy Martin, wants to change her hairstyle, but she's confused about what to do. She goes to the salon with her mom, Bo, who is played by Tracy Ellis Ross, and this is where her stylist, Yaya, played by the singer-songwriter Jill Scott, who is from Philadelphia, bursts into song to help her see that she will be beautiful no matter what she decides to do. I'm Marty Moscowane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
What's really going on?
I didn't know this decision was going to be so hard. Now I just want to go back to what I know.
Well, okay. If you want to go back to relaxing your hair, that's fine. I'll support you. But is that really how you feel?
I feel like I'm going to make the wrong choice.
Oh. There is no such thing as a wrong choice. And despite what the world tells us, all black hair is beautiful. Truly. Let me show you.
Styles to choose from.
Doesn't matter if your hair is short or long, deep conditioning will keep it strong. Dye it blonde or wear it down, do what you want and you still be melanin brown.
No, you're still a sister
with a beautiful crown.
Doesn't really matter how you wear your hair, little sister, just remember to take care of it, my sister. Wear a silk bonnet and grease it at night.
Don't let them pull your edges in tight.
Listen to me, honey. I know what I'm talking about.
That's right.
Fabulous.